In August 2016, Khalid Al-Kazaz returned to Canada after a three-year ordeal in Egypt of wrongful imprisonment and travel ban. Within a few months, Khalid and his wife, Sarah, along with friends, founded the Al-Kazaz Foundation for Education and Development. The foundation aims to foster equity of access and outcomes for underprivileged communities. Let's sit down with Sarah Atiya and Bayan Khatib to talk about the foundation's work. Sarah, Bayan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, I want to get right into the conversation about the foundation we're talking about today. So take me back to, you know, you came back with your husband and your kids back to Canada, and then what happened?
Okay, let me take you back to that day. It was really after 3 years of a combination of, you know, my husband's forced disappearance, solitary confinement, prison visits, and then, you know, being banned from travel and all of that. So, you know, our first feeling was just thank God, right, when we got here, finally home. Finally able to restart our life, catch up on all the lost time that we had, and really give back to the community that supported us. And that, I think, was a lot of the motivation that led to the birth of the foundation.
And what are you hoping the foundation will do? So it's the Al-Kazaz Education Development Foundation.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's the Kazaz Foundation for Education Development, which we call QED. So like I said, we had got so much support from our community. When I came back in April during Khalid's detainment, I had so much support from people who I knew, people who I didn't know, human rights organizations, people that I haven't met today. And that was just so empowering. That helped me get through day to day. That helped, you know, the ultimate release of Khalid and us coming home and just restarting our lives. So that's what we envisioned with the foundation, especially my husband Khalid, when he was finally able to come back to life, really, and just do what he's always been passionate about. We as a family wanted to give back. And we wanted to help empower other communities, other individuals, other families who went through similar ordeals or similar injustices. And that's what really it was about. And so we really hope that the foundation and the projects that we're starting with the foundation will do just that. They will empower communities, they will empower individuals, they will connect communities, and through innovation really cause real change in people's lives.
So, Bayan, how does the QED Foundation really talk about the principles, not principles, but elements that Sarah talked about connecting communities, empowering individuals? What are some of the projects that you guys have underway?
So QED formed only a few months ago, actually. In September, October was when we first got together and formed the organization. And in this very short time, things moved very quickly. And we actually have several projects in the works. Some of the highlights, here's our pamphlet.
Very nice.
Some of our projects that I would like to tell you about today are the online platform for refugee support services. So we would like for our online platform to be a place where service providers and people from disadvantaged communities can go to get information and watch small educational videos to help them. And so one of the educational videos which we're going to have on there is an online training for workers in vulnerable communities. And as somebody who's been working kind of on the front lines with newcomers, I know that it's very important that volunteers know how to work with people who've come from traumatized backgrounds. Yeah. Because in our line of work, a lot of people who come and work with these newcomers don't know anything about how, you know, the sensitivities and the issues that you need to be aware of in working with these communities, and at the same time how to care for yourself while working with traumatized individuals. So this is one of the courses that we have going on.
And so the courses will focus on sort of specific training, health care and well-being for the worker, but then also resources that they can use to work within the community.
Yeah. Okay. So this is one of the projects. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Family Support Network, which perhaps Sarah can talk about later. Mm-hmm. And the other one that I wanted to highlight today was the Mental Wellness First Aid Kit. And this is my personal favorite project that I'm very excited about.
Go ahead, take us away. So what is this? What is this kit that you're hoping to, that you guys are hoping to launch?
So we came across some research from the University of Manchester that shows that there are certain things that parents can do to help their children who have experienced trauma, and that these things are very simple and are actually more effective than getting help from a psychologist or a therapist. And we all know that people living in refugee camps and even Canadians, newcomer Canadians, do not always have access to psychologists and psychiatrists. Like, even in Canada, if I wanted to see a psychiatrist, it's a 6 months to a 1 year wait. A psychologist costs like $100 an hour.
Yeah.
So not everybody has that kind of access. So it's very important that we find other ways to help ourselves. So this mental wellness first aid kit teaches parents how to care for their children who've experienced trauma. And the amazing thing is that the research shows that these things are very effective. And one of the things that this course addresses is dealing with not just the stigma of mental wellness, because a lot of times people coming from these communities don't even want to acknowledge that mental health is a thing.
Yeah.
We want them to know that mental health is something as important as physical well-being, and that you have to care for yourself and for your child's mental wellness like you do for their physical wellness.
So maybe I'll use this opportunity. Sarah, I know, you know, you had a very traumatizing experience as well. So how do you think, like, the point that Bayan is bringing up about, you know, having the right support systems for kids, do you think that something like this would have helped you, work with your own children when you were going through your experience?
Yeah, so alhamdulillah, like, thank God, we're now at the end of it, so we can reflect back and say what could have been done differently. But yes, at the peak, it was very traumatizing for me as a mother, as a single mother of four young kids, and my kids. I mean, sometimes we forget that kids actually pick up everything that's going on. Like, you know, we feel that they're still young and they don't know what's happening, but they do.
They can sense the tension.
They sense the tension. They are affected very deeply, very long term. We've been back here now for 6 months, and we're still dealing with a lot of the issues that they had that we went through. And yes, even though I had a lot of support through our ordeal, that would have been very helpful for me. I mean, when people go through trauma, and the Syrian refugees, the refugees in general, many have experienced far worse trauma than I went through. But even the ordeal that I went through, you forget the little things. You forget to hug your child. You're so overwhelmed as a mother, as a parent, with the crisis itself, that you forget how to make others around you feel better. Mm-hmm. So for someone to remind me, to help me, to coach me, I think it's crucial. And I'm very excited about this project as well. I hope to see real change, you know, when we look in the eyes of these young Syrian refugee children and the mothers who are struggling to start their lives over.
So, Bayan, can you tell me, we got Sarah's personal experience. What about your own, your own personal experiences working with Syrian refugees? How do you hope this kind of kit would really give them the practical tools they need?
In my experience in working with the Syrian newcomers, I found that when they first arrive, their needs are the survival needs. You know, they want to find a place to live. They want to learn English. They need to find a job, figure out their finances, get their kids set up in school. But after about a year or so, which many of the Syrians are now at that point, the mental health issues start to really arise. And so I find that this project we're working on is really timely, and it's the right time for us to really start supporting their mental health needs. We've connected with the Syrian Canadian Foundation, which I also volunteer with, and they have been on the front lines working with the newcomers since their arrival. Their objective is to help with, you know, successfully integrate the newcomers. They have a database of all of the newcomers, so they were kind of the natural partner for disseminating this project. So we're in the middle of production right now. We've actually already produced the video in Arabic, and we plan to produce it in other languages, because although we are starting with the Syrian newcomers, we're definitely not only focused on the Syrian newcomers. We want to help all disadvantaged communities, all refugee communities. So it will be translated to other languages, and we've actually partnered with Trauma Assist to have it translated into Tamil to help the Tamil community as well.
Maybe one question perhaps for the both of you. What about the access of technology? So these are online support systems. When you're coming in as a refugee, how do we, isn't it Army targeting then a certain type of refugee when it comes to socioeconomic status? Because you need access to technology. So how would you address, how are you hoping this will address that?
Well, first of all, we're also working with the service providers.
Okay.
So this video was also translated into English, and in English it targets the service providers. So people working with the refugees directly also need to be aware of this information, and they can relay it to them. Also, the newcomers in Canada, I believe, have access to technology. and to the internet. I've met many of them. They all have phones. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a necessity of life, and you can't really do without one. And so they all have that, and I think it's, I don't think there's an issue with access. If we're talking about refugees in say, Turkey or Jordan, the University of Manchester, when they implemented this project, they printed out the information into a little pamphlet and they put it inside a bag of bread. And so,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have to be creative in how you disseminate. But when we're talking about the newcomers in Canada, I think technology is the way of the future.
I want to shift the conversation a bit now to the family family support networks. I know that's another project that you guys are working on. Sarah, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, obviously you didn't have an official family support network and you didn't have an official foundation supporting you when you were going through your own personal experience. But talk to me a little bit about the birth of family support network in relation to Friends of Khalid.
Okay, so when I came back to Canada when my husband was detained, I came back to a group of amazing people who were, a lot of them were with us on campus many years ago, and they had formed the Friends of Khalid campaign, and that was really, you know, for me, the family support network, and it was through them that I got a lot of the support that I needed individually. Kind of, you know, people asked me what motivated you to keep going in this campaign. We had a lot, you know, it wasn't always a success. We had a lot of doors closed in our faces. We had a lot of moments where we thought it was completely impossible.
And I think there were also times where it felt very incremental.
Oh, definitely.
And as someone
definitely
watching from the outside, yeah. So I can't even.
Yeah, we had no idea when this would end. We had really no end in sight. And they kept me going. They motivated me. They gave me the they reminded me of the faith, and they kept me going every day. And they never gave up. And a lot of those people are what, you know, we always feel like the foundation is a natural progression of the campaign, and a lot of the supporters of the campaign are on our advisory committee of the foundation. So that's really great for us. So on a personal level, I was just like, you know, I had this. You know, the day I came back, the day I returned to Canada, the next day I drove to Ottawa and I met Monia Mazir, who's another incredible woman who went through a personal tragedy herself. It was the first time that I met her. And she really guided me, supported me on a personal level and on a campaign level. You know, she gives a lot of really valuable advice moving forward. And people like her really strengthened me and really empowered me to go on. And I hope, you know, if I can do just a little bit of that to other mothers, other women who are struggling through things that are similar or deals of injustice. And that's really where the idea of the family support network. So we're still in the baby steps, as Bayan said. We're just, we've only been a couple of months, but I really hope that soon other families could reach out to us. Unfortunately, there are people suffering. Mm-hmm. There are going to be other families going through things like this. And I want to be there for them as a foundation and as an individual.
What's your vision for the family support network?
It will include probably an online segment, because that's a lot of what the foundation is doing. And just a place that people can come, families can come to for that support, not just campaign advice and how we're not really talking about lobbying or mm-hmm. or, you know, media or anything like that, but just how a mother can support her child. So the media kit will be the mental wellness kit will be there. Little things.
I mean, so it seems like it's a holistic
exactly
approach.
Exactly. I mean, mm-hmm. I had questions. A lot of people struggle. You know, should we start a campaign if one of our loved ones is imprisoned injustly, or should we stay quiet? Little questions that come up that are really important, and individuals by themselves are in a really traumatic kind of time that they can't make these decisions. We will be there to support them, to also direct them to resources, so resources for their children. A lot of those resources will be through our foundation. So it's just kind of like a place where they can come, feel safe, no judgment, find other women who went through similar experiences and support them.
Or men,
yeah. So it's definitely, mm-hmm. you know, I always talk about women because it's connected to me, but
yeah.
It's, you know, there are cases of women who are detained, and there are cases of other loved ones being detained where it's a man who's supporting them. So individuals and families going through similar ordeals.
So as we wrap up, a lot of information. If there's one message people just tuned in, you want them to take away and remember about QED, what is it in like 15 seconds or less? Bayan, we'll start with you.
I'm very grateful to be in Canada, with a country where volunteerism is so much part of our culture. And I think that, you know, as human beings in this global world, it's all of our duty to take action, to participate, and whether it's with our foundation or any other foundation doing good in the world, it's just so important that everybody takes a step towards doing good in the community.
Wonderful.
Okay, and really adding to that, I always tell people, like, nothing's impossible, because that's our foundation was built on that, really. Like, when people told me, just be patient and make, pray that Khaled will be safe, and that's a big part of it, people around me believed that nothing was impossible, and that led to our family's success story and the birth of the foundation. So, and that everyone has a role to play. It was, that one person who sent a letter to their MP, or, the people that came together for the campaign, that really made a difference at the end. So that's really the message I want to tell people. As Bayan said, it's not only responsibility that we have as individuals when we see injustice or when we see people who need help to help, but it's also something that we can do, that real change can happen through our work.
And if people want to get in touch with you guys or partner, access some of the resources that are available right now, what's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
Our website, it's very easy, q-ed.org. And all of our contact information is there, and we would love to hear from everyone who wants to be a part of this.
Thank you so much to both of you for taking the time to be on the show. I know, Sarah, it's always difficult to talk about your experience, so really appreciate it. Thank you both once again.
Thank you.
Hey, YouTube, we hope you benefited from this video. If you liked it, or if you didn't, let us know in the comments below. And if you're interested in learning more, check out some of our other videos. And don't forget to subscribe so you can get new videos every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.